is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Good show coming your way today. We got John Clayton at 4 o'clock talking NFL. We've got Andrew Brandt, former member of the Green Bay Packers front office, now an analyst with us at 4:30 to talk some football, as well as Paul Moyer at 5 o'clock. You know him and you love him. So Paul will be with us at 5 o'clock. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We are back with you in full force. Dave Wyman is back from his vacation in beautiful Palm Springs, and he came back to Palm Springs-like weather here in Seattle. Hi, Dave.
How you guys doing? I missed you. You believe that?
No, you didn't. You didn't miss us. I don't think you even
thought
about us.
Oh, I did.
You were laying by a pool. You had a nice drink in your hand. You were enjoying the sunshine and nobody bothering you. We may have crossed your mind a time or two.
Well, yeah, maybe just a little bit. But it was great. You know, and it was hot there. I had to get up early to go play tennis or do anything like that. It was 9,500. Then I get home and go into my backyard just now before the show and broke into a lather. It's hot out there. So it's good to be back and getting back in the swing of things. I appreciate you guys allowing me to go and take a little vacation there.
Well, yeah. It's good to have you back, Dave. We really miss you. I was telling the listeners how the show just isn't the same without you, and so it's nice to have your presence
sure
back.
You did.
No, that's what I was saying yesterday, wasn't it, Bob? I told everyone how much we miss Dave and how it's going to be great to have him back tomorrow because, the show without Dave Wyman just isn't quite the same.
It's odd. It didn't really come out that way, if that was your intent. I don't recall hearing it that way, although you did have some unique thoughts on what the Seahawks broadcast might sound like without Steve Rabel there, and maybe we'll be able to find those audio cuts and play those for Dave later in the show. Jim got creative with what he thought that might look like, because we were talking about Rabel retiring from doing the news. He's not retiring from the Seahawks, obviously, but the news, and right. Dave or Jim was just sort of speculating as to what the broadcast might sound like
yeah.
if he left you on your yeah. own.
Well, yeah, and if Dave had to do it by himself, it'd be fantastic.
Well, actually, I think what it is they would bring the professor up there, and I would be doing the play-by-play, and it would sound like this. Oh, man, there he goes. Oh, God, look at that. Off the left end there, 7-yard gain. Who is that, John? That's Chris Carson. Yeah.
That sounds vaguely familiar of what I was saying yesterday, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah,
vaguely. Vaguely the operative word there. We'll play it for you, Dave. We'll find those and play it for you later on in the show.
Okay.
But while you were gone, we were going back and forth what felt like every single day with news coming out about Major League Baseball. It's happening. It's not happening. A new proposal. They're going to reject it. They did reject it. A new proposal. They're going to reject it. They did reject it. It was just... it was nonsense, and it got to the point where now there will be a season. They did not come to an agreement, so this is the owners of Major League Baseball's option to go ahead and implement the season they want in place, and I guess we'll worry about work stoppages and what's going to come next year as a result of this. But now it's about, all right, how does it look? You're talking about a 60-game season in 66 days, and, we're trying to figure out, all right, what does that look like? Who does that favor? Who is that a disadvantage to? And a bunch of different things to touch on. Mariners GM Jerry DePoto was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, and they talked about a bunch of different things. And cut number one, he talked about just the difficulty of developing a team without a minor league season.
And it would be really hard to continue to develop an organization without a minor league season, but that makes us like 29 other teams in that regard. So, one way that we have tried to solve this is, in addition to having a really young major league roster, we are very likely to have among the youngest, if not the youngest, taxi squads. We are going to really focus on making sure that this is about developing our young players and keeping our eye on the big picture that we have been so focused on for these last 20 months or so.
And then one more, where we were speculating before the whole pandemic about this season, understanding it wasn't about winning and when they weren't going to compete this year. It was about the development of the young guys and the core. And, hey, when are we going to see Kelnick? Are we going to see Rodriguez? When might we see these guys called up? Cut number two, Jerry talks about having to take a step back from some of those guys they thought they might bring up in late 2020.
That's strange. You know, it's there are a handful of players who we did have a general timeline or an expectation that they would have experienced a half a season or two-thirds of a minor league season and then progress to the big leagues and get their feet wet toward the tail end of 2020. And we do have to pump the brakes on that and see where they are in their development.
So therein lies a significant change where, you know, when rosters expand late in the season, normally you'd see guys get called up and they'd get, a little taste of the big leagues. And everybody was looking forward to those names we've been hearing about over and over. In a 60-game season, perhaps that may not happen. So one of the more than a handful of things that are going to be decidedly different about this year.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, the 60-game season, how much is that going to have an effect? Because, players can come up and, have a good streak. Now, I realize, it's, almost a third of the season. But, sometimes guys come up, and if you do it for a short while, but can you do it for the long haul? And that's going to be the interesting thing. I mean, maybe they call up some of the younger guys and, somebody comes up and goes on a streak. But, after we always talk about, eventually, pitchers will figure out a hitter, like Kelenic or some young guy, Kyle Lewis, possibly, that, that over time. And that's the thing about baseball. It's how you do over time. It's not, it's not a sprint. It's more of a marathon because you're going through 162 games typically. And so I wonder if we're going to be able to see some flashes from some of these young guys. But it's a good little preview for some of these guys, and I wonder if they'll be a little bit more aggressive. Sounds like not, but I mean, for some of these guys that are the young guys that they wanted to kind of bring along, I wonder if there's going to be some opportunities here and there where you can bring guys up maybe a little bit faster than you would in a 162 game season.
Yeah, they could end up doing that, but I was just thinking about it overall, whether it's more disappointing for a developing team like the Mariners or more disappointing for a team that was gearing to contend for the World Series this year during a 162-game season. And I think it's just disappointing for everybody involved. I mean, even if let's say the Dodgers win the World Series this year, they were projected to maybe win it in a full season of 162 games, and then here they are winning during 60 games. It won't seem the same, I don't think. You could almost put an asterisk on it if you want. And then a developing team like the Mariners, you're not getting what DePoto was hoping for with Kelenic. Probably was going to show up in September, or he was talking about two-thirds of the season anyway. Logan Gilbert, we were probably going to see him. The good news, though, as he pointed out, they're going to have a lot of these top prospects on this taxi squad. I'm still not quite familiar with what this whole taxi squad thing is, but it sounds like those guys are going to be down there at Cheney Stadium, and they're going to get a lot of work in with inter-squad games, and it won't be the same as facing opponents in minor league games, AAA or AA. But I still think it's going to help. And as Jerry also pointed out, all the other teams are in the same boat with this. So it does kind of push the timeline back, doesn't it? Because if you were sitting there thinking, yeah, the Mariners are going to be ready to go in 2021 or 2022, now you're thinking 2022 or 2023.
Yeah, and he's right in that everybody's in the same boat, yet you could argue, and I don't know, statistically if they will be the youngest team in the league, but they'll be amongst the youngest, and they had, their season was more about development, where there are a lot of teams that are more veteran, and it was about, hey, we're set to win right now, whether you're talking about the Dodgers or the Astros or any of these other teams. So they're in a little different boat in that sense, and you could say, well, that might set back the development of the, we were listening to Jerry talk about them being competitive in 21. I think initially he said 20, but 21, maybe 22. How far back does that push that? We'll see. Cut number three, DePoto says they've got faith in the young guys like Kelenic and Gilbert and could learn if they're thrown into the mix, but still don't want to move too quickly with them.
We do have faith, and those two players in many ways are extraordinary. We do have faith that the talent level, the focus level, the baseball IQ and intelligence of both players, that if we do put them in the deep end of the pool, they will eventually learn to swim. But we don't want to challenge them and harm their confidence by doing that too quickly. So we're just going to try to be cautious in how we move with all of our young players. And those are just two great examples of what the value of developmental reps truly provides.
I just felt Dave Wyman cringe right there. I felt you cringe, Dave, when he said we don't want to harm their confidence. I felt you just go, ugh. Did you?
Well, a little bit, but I mean, look, that's the difference between, you know, I'm a football guy and, you know, and it's just different in baseball. And I don't think that that's just, it's not just Jerry DePoto, right? Everybody in baseball, that's just the way it's done. It's counter to how I feel about the trial and error process and everything. So, but, you know, I guess you do have, it's so different in football because you'd never put like a high school kid on a pro team. He would get killed, right? And so, you know, there's just that development there that, but, you know, I guess that's their equivalent. You know, that's the idea that you don't want to put a high school kid in with the pros, and it's fairly close to that. I mean, some of these guys are pretty young, just out of high school themselves. So I get it, and I understand that part. So, yeah, less cringing than usual. But I have to say that, you know, over the years, it always runs through my mind, like, okay, what is it about – I mean, does it speak to the guy's mental fragility? I mean, is he so delicate that he can't handle? No, it's not that, I don't think, because, you know, these are mentally tough guys that, you know, baseball players, very ritualistic, and they, you know, are just very dedicated. And I think some of the most dedicated athletes, honestly, because they do it over time, you know, over such a long period of time that, you know, you have to be really mentally disciplined in order to do that. So, yeah, I've changed my thinking on that, but it does always enter my mind. And I don't know, text in to 710-710 if you feel like, you know, that maybe is a flawed sort of principle in Major League Baseball, that they should throw guys in there. But I'm sure that a guy like Jerry DePoto could give you, you know, dozens of examples of guys that they did do that with and possibly, you know, screwed up. I mean, maybe that screwed up Mike Zunino. What was he, like a year and a week, I think? Or maybe it was 1 week short of the day that he was drafted that he got brought up to the big leagues. And he's been a good player, but, you know, we always say about him, I mean, he's either going to hit at 500 feet or he's going to strike out. And, you know, maybe somewhere along the line, developmentally, that was not the way to go with him.
Yeah, one more before you jump in, Jim. I just want to, that might, you know, connect to what Dave was just saying. Cut number four, talking about Jared Kelnick in particular. Jerry saying, yeah, a future talent. He just hasn't had enough reps to learn how to fight through the struggles yet.
With Jared Kelnick, he's a terrific talent. We think a future star here with the Mariners. And he still has less than 100 plate appearances above A ball. And, you know, while that is not damning in and of itself, it does present challenges because he's not yet had to struggle and get over that hump and battle what I'm certain will be, you know, major league shortcomings. He will run into bumps in the road, and he hasn't had to manage that yet, which is part of development.
Yeah, and Jim, you know, just dovetailing on what Dave was talking about with baseball, that it is a marathon. It's a grind. It's 162 games. It's almost every night. And especially for a young guy like Kelnick, who's got less than 100 at-bats, as he said, above A-ball, and then you picture him at the big league level where they're going to have the advantage, you know, especially once they get him figured out. Maybe early, they don't know he doesn't hit low and away well or up and in or what his weak spots are yet. But once that book is out there, we've seen it time and time again, where once they've got video and tape on a guy, they make the adjustment. He hasn't had to really go through that where, oh, it's my move now. Okay, they're pitching me up and in. That's the hole in my swing, or that's my weak spot. How do I counter that? You know, and that's where the grind is in place. And he's got to figure out how to play that chess game each series, perhaps, with each new opponent that has the book on him. And he hasn't had to do that yet.
No, he hasn't. And that's the thing. I mean, you just leave it to the baseball people, because they've had all kinds of examples of guys that have not, that they've rushed to the big leagues and haven't worked out. The only thing is that, you know, I mean, I'm looking at Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez in particular, and you like to think that those kids are going to be good enough to be even to handle those challenges. And again, you defer to the baseball people on this, and I'm a guy on the radio talking about it, just kind of looking. And Dave, I do agree with you a little bit, because there's a part of me that's thinking, now come on, you know, if you come up and you struggle, and let's say Kelnick comes up and goes 0 for his first 15. Okay, is that really going to harm him in the year 2026 when he's playing in the big leagues? Are we going to go, you know, he wouldn't have been, you know, he would have been better than this if they hadn't brought him up in 2020 and he went 0 for 10. I mean, what does that say about a kid? You know, that's the thing with and I was thinking about Zunino and Ackley. We always talk about that. Boy, Ackley and Zunino, they rushed him up, and look at what happened to them. Well, they might have been terrible anyway. Let's say they didn't rush him up. Those guys just maybe wouldn't have worked out. So, and part of it is our impatience as Mariner fans, too. We keep hearing about these guys. We heard about the big three forever and ever and ever, and then we finally saw one of them come through anyway. Taijuan Walker, I guess, you know, still has a chance, but he's had injuries that have slowed him down. And then Holtzen never really amounted to much, but now I think he's with the Cubs as a reliever. But I guess you just... You want to see these guys, and yet you have to wait and trust their judgment on this not rushing them business, but you kind of want to see them rushed anyway, I guess, is how I
you
feel
do.
About it.
Well, yeah, I agree with you as a Mariner fan. Just as a fan, I'm excited to see these guys. I'm excited to see what we think could be future stars in Kelnick and Rodriguez, and I can't wait to see them. But having said that, and using some of those guys as a cautionary tale that you brought up, I'm okay, especially with an organization that has made it clear. Yeah, they're not challenging for a postseason, even in a 60-game season. We can get deeper into that conversation if we want, but there should be no urgency to rushing anybody, whether you're rushing them back from injury or you're just rushing them back from or rushing them because of inexperience. That's, I guess, a luxury to not competing this season anyway, if we're going to look silver lining. There should be no urgency. Yeah, we can't wait. I'm excited about the potential, but I'm also – at peace with, okay, you know, baby step it. Just when he's ready, his play will let you know when he's ready. And he's not the difference. They are not the difference between this team going to the postseason and not going to the postseason.
No, I know, but it's also a season, Bob, in which, you know, it's like, well, who cares? It doesn't matter. 60 games. Is it really going to hurt Kelnick or Rodriguez to have a look-see of, you know, 5 games, let's say, and just give them a taste of it and what they can expect? I was just sitting here thinking, like, what about, you know, some 19-year-old that comes in the NBA and he goes up against LeBron James and has it handed to him in his first game? Does that just, you know, destroy him the rest of his career? I don't think so. And again, I'm saying all this stuff. It's just me talking about it. But you want to make sure you defer to those guys who know what they're really talking about when it comes to developing these prospects. But I just kind of get a kick out of it because Dave talked about being mentally fragile. You wonder, I mean, if they're that fragile, I mean – Do you really want him on your team?
Well, and I don't know if that's mental fragility or if is it just that big of a gap between what they're seeing at A-ball, which is what Kelnick, again, 100 bats outside of A-ball, and what he's seeing at the big league level where maybe you just get completely dominated and shut down. I don't know. I don't know how big of a difference in talent is it from college to pro in football and college to pro in basketball versus single A to major leagues in baseball. I mean, you know, maybe that gap is decidedly bigger. And, yeah, maybe it could just be a nature of the sport. I mean, like you, I'm going to rely on the guys that are developing these guys year in, year out. They're watching as, you know, use the thing that Dave brought up. We don't see them practice. We don't know what's going on during practice. So their scouts and their coaches at the minor league level and their managers are telling them, hey, yeah, he's really scuffling with his defense, or he's really scuffling with balls low and away, or he can't pull the ball or whatever. And if he can't do it at that level, well, then what makes you think he's going to have success at the big league level? Let him work out his issues against lesser talent if they're not succeeding there.
Yeah, two things, guys. Yeah, first of all, I think the only thing I can figure is that it is like putting a high school player into a pro camp, you know, as far as the NFL goes. Hi, Frank. How you doing, buddy? Who was that?
It's Sky the puppy, Dave.
Sky the puppy. Okay.
Yeah, my wife and
the
kids.
The other thing,
my wife and kids are over in Ellensburg, and I've got puppy duty while I'm trying to do the show.
Puppy sitting. Yeah. You know, I was going to say, listen to us. Look what we're doing, guys. We're talking about baseball. We're not talking about, you know, the proposed season or this side or the owners or scum and the players or idiots and all that stuff. None of that stuff. We're talking about actual baseball. It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. It is a good thing. And there's certainly more to address with this team because I think this team is potentially really fascinating with a lot of questions we can get into. And maybe some of those will come up in question, man, which we'll have today. But right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Well, we have a name involving NHL Seattle, but not exactly the one we've been waiting for. Amazon has purchased the naming rights to the arena where NHL Seattle will play. It will be called Climate Pledge Arena, and it will be the first net zero carbon certified arena in the world.
You know, when you first heard it, it sounds goofy, but, you know, our guy Brent Stecker from 710sports.com, the editor there, wrote a nice piece about this story, and he made really good sense. I would check that out if you haven't read it. But the reality is most stadium names, arena names, sound goofy when you first hear them. I mean, how long did it take to get used to T-Mobile Park? We're so used to Safeco Field, it's T-Mobile Park. Oh, I hate the pink. I'm not going into that ballpark. I mean, people love to rail and complain about things that are new, and there's change, and change is tough. So it'll take, what, a couple of weeks, a month, a season before it just becomes, oh, yeah, I'm going to the arena. I'm going to the Pledge Arena, the Pledge, the Climate, whatever it becomes. It'll sound normal. Same with the team name. People will complain. Some will love it. Some will hate it. Eventually, it just sounds normal, and you don't even give it a second thought.
I would have preferred Net Zero Arena. You know, what's with the Pledge? I don't know. To me, it sounds like an aluminum can recycling program is taking place there. But you know what? This is how I hope that it just kicks butt. Because really, I mean, if you want to do good things for the environment, it has to be economically viable. I mean, look at the cars on the road now. The Priuses, I mean, originally it was Larry David and Ted Danson drove them because they were the right thing. It was the right thing to do for the environment, but it wasn't economically viable. Now it is. Look at, like, Lyft and, you know, and Uber and all these, you know, they're doing it because it's making them money, and it's a great thing. So I hope that their net zero carbon arena works out and is one of the best things, you know, in all of the NHL. And I don't know, just the Pledge thing to me just sounded a little bit different. But, yeah, like you said, Bob, we'll get used to it.
Well, I was looking at climatepledgearena.com, and they had a video there, and it's Amazon's commitment to be net zero carbon across their business by the year 2040. And so they're naming it after a vision, and they've got rainwater for ice, no fossil fuels, the electricity is generated by solar farms, no plastic there at the arena by 2024. That's the hope. So, yeah, boy, Danny trashed on the name. I heard him with Tom, Jake, and Stacy today. He didn't like it at all, but I'm kind of with you on this one, Bob. I think we're going to be talking about, hey, you go into Climate Pledge tonight, you know, to see the Sonics or to see the,
yeah, whatever it gets shortened to.
Yeah,
it'll get shortened to something, and that'll just become what it is, right? It was Quest Field, then it was CenturyLink Field, and people would rail against that. They're not used to it. It's just once you hear it 8,000 times or you say it 8,000 times, you don't even consider it.
I think when you go in there, whatever the name is, and we know what the name is, Climate Pledge, you're going to walk in there and go, and someone like me who remembers the original Coliseum and then when they renovated it in 94, 95, you're going to look around and go, okay, the roof is the same, but this is a completely different place. It's going to be state-of-the-art. It's going to be cool to have something like that in Seattle.
Yeah, thank
God
they kept
the roof. There?
No.
Anybody want to read the 512 area code text?
Go ahead, Dave.
That's okay. You go ahead, Chip. You read it.
Yeah, that's probably, we probably can't do that one. Go ahead, next.
It was reported this morning that the NFL canceled the Hall of Fame game that was scheduled for August 8th, but in a league-wide conference call this afternoon, they announced that training camp will proceed as scheduled beginning on July 28th.
Okay. I gotta be honest, the Hall of Fame game was something I would, if I did watch it, I would watch the first, what, series or two until the starters, whichever starters were playing, were out. And then you kind of lose interest because it didn't involve the Seahawks, obviously. And that's fine. It's, you know, as long as the season is still on schedule as we sit right now, it is. I'm at peace with the Hall of Fame game. Yeah, it'd be cool just to have a live event going on. I probably would pay more attention since we're sort of starved for sports. But to me, not a huge issue. Season is still on schedule as we sit now.
Yeah, people are talking about two preseason games. This would be the fifth, right, a preseason game for two teams. And, you know, to me, I more than anything, I feel sorry for the guys that got inducted into Hall of Fame, having to postpone it a year. You know, and I don't know, they're going to be lumped in with the class next year. And so it's just going to be more, probably shorter speeches, things like that. So that's the part of it, I think, that got canceled that I guess, bothered me. But I will not miss the Hall of Fame game.
All right. Good stuff there. As we said, we'll talk. We'll try to get more into the arena issue. A lot of people texting in on that and a lot of baseball talk to cover still as well. Dave Wyman is back with us. Yesterday, we touched on Colin Cowherd's comments that the Seahawks are showing interest in Antonio Brown. It's an attempt to catch up to the 49ers, in his opinion. But are the 49ers really that far ahead? We'll talk more about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, another edition of Question Man. It's been a while since we've done that. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. And Dave, you're connected. You're with us right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're there because I think we found audio. Before we get into what Colin Cowherd said and get your take on that, and you know, teams are trying to keep up with the 49ers, I just wanted to hear what Jim had to say about you yesterday. Cut number 9, Matt. Oh, you don't have it. Okay, I got a text from Morris said you had it. But
Matt. Matt's looking out for his golf show, buddy.
Yeah, he just wants you to continue to say his future is bright. When you upset Jim, he says, you know what, your future's not quite as bright as it was. And then when you appease him, your future is really bright, we've come to learn. So once we find that, we'll play it for you, Dave. I will say this. He held off. He held off. He held it in for day after day. I thought, wow, he's not going to rip Dave. And then for whatever reason, it just caught him yesterday.
If we don't find clip number 9, I just wanted to say that I actually go on vacation, so I don't have to listen to Jim. So if you don't find it, then, yeah, I mean, that's part of the vacation. I mean, it's like, yeah, we had a little golf cart, you know, I read by the pool and, you know, played a little bit of golf and tennis and everything. That's all part of it, but a big part of it is not hearing from Jim. So, yeah.
Well, I hate to bum you out, Dave, but we just found it. So here it is.
Okay, so Rabel can walk away from Cairo TV, but there's no way that he can walk away from the Seahawks broadcast, because if he did, we'd be stuck with Wyman doing a solo job. Can you imagine Wyman doing play-by-play of the Seahawks games?
It finally came. Jim takes a shot at the vacationing Dave Wyman.
It'd be brutal.
He couldn't hold out.
It'd be brutal. I mean, he stumbles through his ads half the time. So, yeah, imagine what he'd be like calling a Seahawks game. Yeah, he's not here, so, you know, so what? He's not going to listen.
That was part. He did an imitation of what your play-by-play would be like later on. I don't know if we have that,
that was the gist of it. Too. Yeah, we could get Jim. Jim could be my color guy, and it would just be, you know, well, you know, I mean, I don't really know anything about football, but it looks to me like, you know, maybe he should have gone to the right instead of the left there. And
yeah, I don't know X's and O's, but boy, number 28 sure looked good on that one play, didn't he, Dave?
What a broadcast that would be. Geez, they only gained a yard. You think you'd try? I don't know. I don't know anything about football, but I would think you'd want to gain more than a yard, wouldn't you? I mean, why would you run that play?
Yeah,
I'd say, Jim, I think they're calling plays that they think will work.
Yeah, they're getting 8 in Las Vegas, Dave. I don't know if he knows that or not, but, man, he shouldn't have fumbled there.
I just picture Dave throughout the broadcast leaning on the end or these are things that just get said. You know, you'd hear a lot of that in the broadcast. So, all right.
Well, I'd be trying to go play-by-play, and Jim would still be talking about the last play. Meanwhile, the ball snapped, and there's another play. Well, two plays ago.
And then a Go-Cougs would find its way in there. Meanwhile, we played a clip from Colin Cowherd yesterday. I'll play this for you, Dave, and get your response. Cut number 6.
See greatness happen early. It's not hard to see Saban by year 3 or Brady by a second or third Super Bowl or the San Francisco 49ers and go, if we don't get ahead of this, if we don't take some big swings on this, we're going to get buried for the next 10 years because San Francisco's not going away. They just gave Kyle Shanahan another extension. Garoppolo got to a Super Bowl in his first full year as 21-5 as a starter. Bosa's better than we thought he would be in the NFL. George Kittle's unguardable. And all those young receivers like Debo appear to be getting better by the game. So I think at some point there's a Niner fear in that division. You better take some big cuts and big swings and big chances, or you're going to be buried by that Niner avalanche for a long time.
And then cut number seven, he said guardable.
Yeah, that just entirely. And, you know, good thing he's not panicking here. You know, it's like you hear like those Navy SEALs and guys that are in combat. They're very calm because there's no reason to push the panic button and start screaming and yelling and waving your arms like a crazy man. That's not how you lead. I mean, that's what he's talking about there. I mean, where did all the panic come from? The Seahawks almost beat him twice. And, yeah. You know, now all of a sudden because they get a couple of players. I mean, look, they're a good team. There's no question. But, my gosh, now you're going to just, like, throw everything, the kitchen sink in. I mean, and I'll let you play the clip. But, I mean, the suggestion of bringing this guy in, that's the definition of panic.
Yeah, cut number seven.
Antonio Brown's a great player. For about a six-year stretch, he wasn't just the best receiver in the league. It wasn't close. His average year was 11 touchdowns, 1,500 yards, and 114 catches. I mean, it was absurd. It's one of the great six-year runs. It's like Randy Moss in his peak. He just couldn't guard him. But not a very good human being. So my two takeaways on this are there's a lot of teams that would like Antonio Brown. But Seattle trusts Russell Wilson because he always does. They trust him to just make it work. Russell Wilson makes everything work. Bad O-lines, good O-lines, rookies, veterans. Russell Wilson makes everything work. And Seattle's saying, well, not ideal, but he'd make it work. That's a big tip of the cap to Russell. But I think there's something else at play here. I think the San Francisco 49ers are so formidable that it is forcing everybody in their division, Seattle, the L.A. Rams, and Arizona, to take big swings.
Yeah, and I brought up what you just brought up yesterday, Dave, is that they beat them once, and they were a couple inches away from beating them a second time, and they didn't have Antonio Brown. Meanwhile, the 49ers did have Debo Samuel and Emmanuel Sanders, and they still had George Kittle, or Kettle, as some like to call him. The idea that they were somehow so buried, and man, what are we going to do? We're being lapped by this team. We need to make a big move here. Let's bring in this guy, Antonio Brown, which I want no part of. We discussed that while you're gone. Bring me Josh Gordon every day, any day over this guy. But the idea that that's their motivation. We're going to be lapped by the 49ers. They're so far ahead of us. We've got to make a move. We've got to take a chance on somebody like this. I think it's nonsense.
Jim, what's the over-under, Jim, on a number of weeks before Antonio Brown becomes a huge problem? A week and a half, you think?
Oh, for any team?
2 weeks?
Yeah, a week and a half.
Bringing him in here.
Well, you look at that Oakland situation. He apologized one day. It was a real heartfelt apology. And then the very next day, he was demanding a trade. So, yeah. I think, a week and a half at most, Dave.
Next thing you know, he's going to be calling Pete Carroll a cracker. You know?
Yeah, and threatening to punch John Schneider. And
right.
You know. Again, people text in, Dave, and I know we're up against the break, but people were texting, oh, you don't want to give this guy a second chance? Well, hey, it's been more than a second chance, and B, you can't – he and Josh Gordon are not equivalent. Josh Gordon has been the victim of his own wrongdoing. He has not been a bad, divisive teammate. There are no sexual assault allegations against him that I'm aware of. Nobody else has been the victim but him, whereas – you know, we've seen Antonio Brown back to his time in Pittsburgh, was a complete creep to Juju Smith-Schuster and had issues with Big Ben Roethlisberger and was much more of a problem in that locker room than anybody ever knew. He gets to Oakland and all of a sudden he's got an issue with Mike Mayock, calling him a cracker, threatening to punch him. He's got a problem with his helmet. He's got a problem with his feet. And then we saw him on camera screaming in front of his kids at the mother of his children. And then he gets into a physical confrontation with movers. And it's just like, okay, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want anything to do with the guy. Give me Josh Gordon. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So,
I agree with you on Gordon. I mean, look, you're right, Bob. I mean, look, the guy, he's a sweet, nice guy. Everything keeps to himself. The guys love him, all that. But, you know, he can't get out of his own way, but it's his own problems. It's not like it's going to affect the entire team the way Antonio Brown did.
Yeah. Hey, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's Kyle Seager's ninth inning home run versus the Orioles back in 2018. That is brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Well, it's been a long time since we've done this segment, and the questions are piling up. Hopefully Jim and Dave are ready. Question Man, coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Whether you've got an answer or not, Bob has a question. And another question. And another question.
Bob has lots of questions. Bob demands answers.
You're going to have to do better than that.
Bob Skelton is the Question Man.
You're Question Man.
That's exactly right. I am Question Man.
So, Bob, what questions do you have for us today?
I don't know, Bobby.
It's been a while since we've heard that open. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The professor, John Clayton, will join us at the top of the hour, but I've got a couple of questions for these guys. And, Dave, let's start with you, and it's on the heels. I wanted to ask you about Antonio Brown, and we got into it for a moment there in the last segment. But how did we've seen this team go with Percy Harvin. We've seen this team go with Jimmy Graham, two guys who were remarkably productive in other settings. What makes us think all of a sudden that we're not going to see, and the complaints were true about both of them, oh, they're trying to force the ball. At the time, it was Bevel. Trying to force the ball to Graham. Trying to force the ball to Harvin. Now we're going to bring in somebody like Antonio Brown, who Danny reminded us yesterday, complained about targets in a game where he was targeted 17 times. 17 times. How do you appease a guy like that, who may be humble to begin with, but comes in and understands, well, we got Tyler Lockett, you got DK Metcalf, and this is a guy who's got a history of being a malcontent. How do you avoid forcing him the ball or trying to appease a personality like that? It just seems untenable to me.
Yeah, there's no room for, and I always say this about football, like for during a season, it's just so intense, you know, as far as the preparation and the scheme and what you're going to run and everything, there's just no room for anything else. I mean, you have to put every bit of what you have focused into winning, you know, into operating as a team. And the things that will kill you are, number one, injuries. I mean, injuries are, we saw it last year, just a killer. But, I mean, if you're able to avoid those and then continue to have this great focus to get to, you know, where the offense and the defense is working together, you're doing better than most. But the other thing that can kill you is if you have whatever you want to call Antonio Brown, a malcontent. I mean, he's not, you know, and look, I was going to make the joke, you know, earlier when they were saying, you know, well, Russell Wilson always makes it work. I'm like, well, does he have a pharmacy? Because, I mean, that's what Antonio Brown needs. I mean, he needs to get himself straight. And I'm not making fun of him for that reason. I mean, I just think that's, you know, I've explained it to people. Like, I have acid reflux. So I take
you and me
Nexium.
Both, buddy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I take it twice a day. And it's just, it's the same thing for taking a medication for, you know, making your head right and getting, you know, your emotions in check and things like that. There's lots of people. Danny used to talk about it all the time, you know, of antidepressants, things like that. I mean, you can fix those things. And to me, Antonio Brown, that's the part that bothers me, I think, the most. Honestly, it's not the things that he's done, you know, because I see, to me, it looks like somebody else is driving. It's not him. And so, but he's so talented. I hate to see guys with that much talent. Who was the guy? Titus Young Jr.
For the Lions.
Yeah. Yeah. And out of Boise State. And he was just such a talented guy, but he just needed to get his head right. And, you know, Brandon Marshall.
Yep.
You know, he did do that. And I was so happy for him and proud of him. Now, he ended up being, you know, a little bit of a – he was in a different part of his career when he came here, but he was pretty helpful. I remember him helping out Trey Flowers. I mean, those things can be fixed. So, you know, for Antonio Brown, it just frustrates me that he is so talented and yet, you know, is not getting the proper help that he needs, because he could be just an amazing addition, but you can't have him here as long as he's not driving. And that's the what I see with him. So, yeah, I mean, you can talk about his talent all you want, but it's not going to change until he decides to change.
Yeah, and again, let's see what comes of the results of the sexual assault investigation. That needs to be cleared up. We don't know if he's going to have legal issues to face, a league suspension for that. So there's still a lot. I don't even think he's going to be able to be allowed to play anytime soon. So I feel like it's sort of a hypothetical conversation. But, Jim, does any heat that was on the seat of Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto disappear for a season because of what we're looking at? A 60-game season, what can you realistically expect? They were coming into the season expected to develop youth, take a step back in order to take a step forward, but this presents more of a step back. And there were some feeling like, okay, he said 2020 is when they were going to start to become competitive, but that's obviously not going to be the case. Does the Heat get turned down? Did this buy them time?
Yeah, well, I didn't even think the Heat was turned up, honestly. I suppose you could argue that it should be. But, well, how could you possibly turn the Heat up or even keep the Heat the same with a 60-game season because everything has changed so dramatically? So you can't really – I think everything that DePoto said a year ago or whenever it was when he was talking about the rebuilding and everything – Or the what was it he used? The reinventing. There was a re-something.
Oh, reimagining.
Reimagining. Okay, all of that stuff. Whatever years he put down for that, I think you just need to, you know, push it up a year. Because this year really is going to be shot. And you probably don't want to use it as an excuse. And you could come back and say, well, Jerry, you know, all the other teams are in the same boat, too. And look at how well they're doing in 2021 or 2022 if the Mariners aren't doing well. But still, I think it's a legitimate excuse. You can't really expect the young guys that they're projecting to be part of, you know, World Series teams in the future in this decade if it's going to happen. This year, you just kind of have to write off and do the best you can with it and hope that taxi squad situation that they're going to have down in Tacoma will at least get them a semblance of development, but it's not going to be anywhere near what they would have gotten if they were playing double-A or triple-A ball.
Dave, quickly, one thing you're looking forward to with the Mariners this season. I said mine was J.P. Crawford. I thought he took a massive step last year as a defensive shortstop, which was the knock on him coming out of Philadelphia, coming out of the minor leagues and getting here to Seattle. He was outstanding, I thought. What one player, one thing are you looking forward to more than any other with the Mariners?
Kyle Lewis. Loved that kid. Remember seeing his family up in the stands and when he had that streak going at the end of the season last year. He's a guy that's overcome a knee injury, talked about how he wouldn't change it, and I felt that same way after I'd gone through that. You know, it made you a better person and a tougher athlete, and I love his game. He's got a nice swing and a great guy, and I think he's going to be one of these heroes, you know, a Mariner hero in years to come. Maybe a superstar, Jim, even, like Chris Carson, possibly. We'll see, though.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Early prediction from Dave Wyman there. I like it. All right, there you go. Hey, how concerning is the cancellation of the NFL Hall of Fame game? We'll ask the professor about that. He's going to join us next. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, start texting them in right now. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll get to your questions and NFL talk coming up with John Clayton. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.